Good afternoon. You're listening to Around the Block, a community news program from the Block by Block team at WPPM LP, Philadelphia 106.5 FM. On this show, we explore issues in the Philadelphia region with voices from the community through original reports from our team of journalists and live interviews. I'm K. Michelle Watson.
And I'm Shania Weitch. Coming up, we'll be talking about Black excellence, hospitality, and cultural agency with Kabila Events founder and CEO, Sonia Sunny Blount. Kabila is the event planning and marketing company behind the Philly Black Wine and Spirits Fest, Culture Fest, and other events in the city.
But first, Philadelphia has lots of cheesy businesses, like a woman-run cheese school, a 24/7 cheese vending machine, legendary cheese shops like the Bruno Brothers, and plenty of restaurants serving all kinds of cheese plates. But there's only one restaurant in Philly where the world's best cheesemonger serves a tableside cheese board experience. Around the Block reporter Alicia Miranda introduces us to the woman who's behind this roaming cheese cart.
Hi, I'm Amelia. I'll be your personal cheesemonger for the evening.
That's Amelia Del Barro. She's an award-winning certified cheese professional. And on Fridays from 6 to 9 p.m., she pushes around a cheese cart at Urban Farmer, a farm-to-table steakhouse on the Parkway.
We have an assortment of 9 different cheeses here. Over here in this corner, this is the least intense of the selection. So we have our Blumy Rind cheeses, things like Brie, Camembert, Triple Cream, if you're familiar with those kinds of categories. And then as we move along the board, it gets more and more intense until we end with our blue. So you can pick 3 or 5. I will plate it up tableside for you, and then we have a selection of accoutrements, and you can have as many or as few of those as you like.
Guests don't need to make a reservation for the cheese cart. They tell their server or wave down Amelia if they're interested.
Hello. Just wanted to let you guys know that we have the rolling cheese cart out tonight. Just for the next few hours, if you're interested in some tableside cheese boards, hearing a little bit about the selections, please let me know.
Awesome, thanks so much.
Amelia introduces people to new cheeses, invites them to ask questions, talks about pairings, and prompts additional conversation. It's an interactive performance that she says takes thoughtful preparation.
I bring my own knives. I have some specialized cheese knives that I use to kind of prep all of the working pieces that I'm going to put on the cart. And then I have a separate set of smaller cheese knives that I use on the cart because there's limited space. Set up the cart with all of the cheeses because we always want to serve them at room temperature for maximum flavor and texture potential. I add all of the accoutrements, and then whatever the garnish happens to be, we use a lot of herbs, fresh herbs. Sometimes there's edible flowers. Just trying to make the cart look beautiful but still accessible. Like, I want it to look like a work of art, but I don't want anybody to be afraid to order from it, because the whole point of the cart is to enjoy the cheese and have a nice little treat. It's a very limited selection of cheese, but I like to curate it so that there is something for everyone. I usually say, what are some of your favorite cheeses? Like, what are your favorite styles of cheese? Do you like Gouda? Do you like cheddar? What is it that you like about it? Is it the texture? Is it the flavor? And just try to narrow down what they're looking for, what types of flavor profiles they enjoy, what types of cheeses they enjoy, and then just give them maybe a taste of something on the cart that I have that might please them.
And sometimes she meets enthusiastic guests, too.
Were you on the news?
I was on the news.
You were on the news. There was someone else.
I saw that.
Yeah.
On 60 ABC, I saw that.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm so honored right now. This is awesome.
The reason Amelia was on TV? In 2025, she was awarded the world's best cheesemonger and became the first American to win first place at the Mondial du Fromage in France. On a recent day off, Amelia and I met up at a cafe to talk more about her competition experience.
When you win a Cheesemonger Invitational, you qualify to compete in what's called CMI Masters. The Masters competition takes all of the winners from previous Cheesemonger Invitationals, and they compete against each other in kind of a mock Mondial competition. And the top 2 scorers in that competition become Team USA, and they go to France to compete in Mondial. So I prepared for this competition every single day for a year. And this is a really intense competition. This is not just cutting and wrapping cheese. This is about cheese artistry. This is about celebrating the cheese in ways that American cheesemongers typically do not get to do. Not only was I trying to present beautiful work, but I was also learning new skills in the process, like completely new skills that American cheesemongers who don't do these competitions probably will never need to use. Just for example, some of the challenges that you have to do in Mondial are cheese sculpture, where they give you three random cheeses and you have to create like a complex sculpture with those. One of them is a combination of tastes, which is essentially a perfect bite. They assign you a cheese and then you have to prepare bites for the judges, and they score you on the quality of the pairing and the quality of the presentation, things like that. Cheese transformation, they assign you a cheese and you have to transform that cheese somehow and then incorporate it into what they call a cold dish. And then my favorite and least favorite is the what we call the plateau. And it is a 1 square meter themed cheese display. And last year the theme was shades of color.
Besides being a global cheese champion, Amelia's career has included selling cheese behind the counter and for industry clients nationally at a company called Formaticum. She filled me in on what it takes to be a cheesemonger.
I have a lot of very specific technical skills when it comes to cheese cutting, cheese maintenance, cheese wrapping, just running a cheese counter, all of the logistics of running a cheese counter. Textbook definition of a cheesemonger is someone who specializes in the sale of butter cheese and other dairy products. But it goes way beyond that. We also do a lot of stewardship. We focus a lot on salesmanship and service and storytelling. We are the people who represent the cheesemakers who can't represent themselves in these stores.
As for what's next, Amelia is hosting events and classes around Philadelphia and hopes to pass on her knowledge to the next generation.
Hopefully, they're Googling their local cheese shop, they're going to their local grocery store, and maybe trying something new, maybe buying more cheese, maybe talking to their local cheesemonger, maybe they want to go into the cheese industry. I want to see more American cheese champions. My goal right now is to help make that happen.
You can follow Amelia on Instagram at EMDALBERO. For Around the Block, I'm Alicia Miranda.
Cheers. Thank you.
Cheers to you guys. Have a great rest of your night and enjoy Vermont.
Thank you. Congratulations again.
Thank you.
What's good, everyone? That is just a taste of my time at the March 1st Love Jones Experience, a Kabila Events annual curated cinema celebration. I first learned of Kabila Events in the summer of 2024. As I was looking for fun to have in the city, Instagram led me to Culture Fest, Kabila's annual summer kickoff event that celebrates Black art, music, and fashion. I've stayed connected with Kabila Events since then and really seeing how the company brings together the community in an intentional way. I'm so excited to learn more about the vision behind Love Jones Culture Fest and all the engagements that Kabila Events offers Philly. Please welcome to the studio Kabila Events founder and CEO, Sonia Sunny Blount.
Yay, I'm so excited to be here. Thank you.
Thanks for coming. I am ready to finally have you in the studio with Philly Kim and have a conversation about who you are and what Kabila Events is.
Absolutely. I'm honored.
From what I've seen, you've really championed Black excellence in Philadelphia, where, as it states on your website, culture, creativity, and commerce intersect.
Mm-hmm.
So tell us in your own words, what is Kabila Events?
Yeah, so Kabila Events means tribe in Swahili, and the whole purpose is to create experiences that brings together community as we celebrate each other, also creating opportunities for Black-owned businesses to have support, as well as expand the reach of the things that we're able to accomplish together through events. So we do some marketing, we do some event planning, some curation, but the whole goal is to continue to cultivate community.
Absolutely. And so what inspired you to start this massive business?
I've always been inspired by the large scale events that happen in Philadelphia. Shout out to Odunde, mm-hmm. Bumi, mm-hmm. for continuing on her mother's legacy. Wadsworth Day, that happens uptown. And some of the larger events that happen in the city, I've always been inspired by how people are able to gather and celebrate and dance and experience joy, even despite all the things that are happening in the world, both then and now. So as I went through my journey and had the opportunity to start hosting some small scale events, I started to realize that there was a gap in some of the people that wanted to host larger scale events and festivals. So I wanted to fill that gap. And as a person that is a millennial, I was like, I want to create spaces for us to have joy and experience it in an intentional way too. So that's where we are. That's pretty much what inspired me. And just seeing some of the people in different generations being able to do all that they did and accomplished without social media, without all of the marketing and things like that, being able to hit the ground and gather people, mm-hmm. that's something that has really always touched me. So
absolutely. And I can agree, even when I was growing up, the Philly Jazz Fest in West Oak mm-hmm. Lane.
Yeah.
Again, Odunde, Juneteenth Festival. Mm-hmm. So many events that just brought energy and culture to the city. And obviously those have been going on for years, but we need someone else to pass the baton too.
Absolutely.
And so I see Kabila Events just really filling in that gap of the new age of Black culture in Philly.
Absolutely.
And so obviously seeing these different events that inspired you, did you notice that something was missing in the Philadelphia landscape for our community, where you were like, hey, this work is more than a dream. This is a necessity.
Yeah, I think that when I started, it was not long before COVID started, which is crazy now because we'll be 5 years in April. And I realized that people were needing and desiring and wanting community. And once COVID ended, it was like an influx of people really, really needing spaces to go and places where they feel seen, felt understood, and they needed that family type of experience. So I think that is kind of where we are now, and that's what helped to get us where we are, because the need was community, and the need was people wanted a space to be seen, heard, and felt, and understood. And I was already doing some small-scale stuff on my own, so being able to bring that all together, bring partners together in order to facilitate that was something that really helped us get to where we are right now.
Yeah, I mean, the start of the pandemic, 3 months felt like 3 years.
I know, yes.
And it was a loneliness epidemic that was going on.
It was.
And, like, people wanted to be outside. And that's honestly how I did find out about Kabila, mm-hmm. is the fact that I wanted to be outside. I was like, I can't wait until the outside opened back up.
Yes.
I need to experience some fun and some culture. So.
Absolutely. And we always integrate. I would say, growing up in Philly, we often integrate into other spaces.
Yeah.
And there was not enough intentional spaces created for us, mm-hmm. that were unapologetically Black, that were unapologetically who we were, who embraced who we were. It was either one or the other. Either you're not going out and being engaged, or you have to integrate and kind of code switch in certain spaces. And with our events, you don't have to do that. You mm-hmm. be who you are. You be yourself. You come as who you are, and we accept and love you for who you are. So,
absolutely. And even though I was gathering footage at Love Jones, it felt like family being mm-hmm. there. It felt like I stepped into an episode of Girlfriends or into the Love Jones film itself.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. It just has a different vibe to it. So what, this is like an off question, but what area of the city are you from?
Mount Airy, Uptown.
Okay. Woo, woo. Come on, Uptown, me too. West Oak Lane, okay.
Yes.
Now in Germantown.
Okay.
But if you had to share on like a TED Talk about your life, mm-hmm. and you had to give a 60-second pitch on the story of Sunny, what would it be?
Oh, that's so interesting. That puts me on the spot, because I did write down on my journal that I want to do a TED Talk, but I didn't even talk about what I wanted to talk about. So let me think about that. A story about my life?
Like, if you had a minute. Maybe a story of who Sunny is.
Okay. If I were to have a TED Talk about who I am, this is so introspective. Oh, my goodness.
I should have given you more time to think. Yeah. I don't know.
I would say that I am a thriving creative in a world that is trying to dim the light of creativity. Mm-hmm. And I would say that I'm constantly discovering and finding who I am and what that looks like. And doing these events and experiences helps me shine a light on that every single day and every single time I'm able to create these spaces. So that's my 60 seconds.
That was good. Makes you want to tap into the mind.
Yes.
Sunny. That's why you need that TED Talk.
I know. Y'all hear that, TED? What's the TED Association organization?
Let's make sure the FCC don't say something else. Oh, sorry. I'm jokes. What have you found most rewarding in being a Black woman entrepreneur?
Most rewarding, I would say, is how Black women have surrounded me and loved upon me and have consistently poured into me. I think that has been such a gap in my life and in this work, because sometimes it feels very lonely. And in being an entrepreneur, you learn so much about other people and about business, but you also learn so much about yourself. And it can be isolating sometimes. So the fact that when I'm able to meet with other women that are entrepreneurs or just attend my events or just love what I do, et cetera, I'm able to be fed and poured into and loved up on. And that type of community, I think, is not highlighted and spotlighted enough, because sometimes people focus primarily on the negativity. And I'm just so blessed to have so many people around me that like open doors for me and speak my name in rooms when I'm not in and invite me to interviews, even when, you know, I'm just going on my normal everyday life. So many women and Black women that are around me pouring into me has been the most rewarding, I would say.
Absolutely. And I definitely see that you champion Black woman-owned businesses mm-hmm. at most of your events, which is definitely an amazing thing to see. We talk a lot about buying back the block or buying the Black dollar. Mm-hmm. Having spaces like Kabila, it cultivates that type of conversation. Because right now, more than ever, we need more money flowing into our neighborhoods and into our community.
Absolutely.
So we got to support one another for sure.
Absolutely.
Let's talk a little bit about the actual events that you have, right? Mm-hmm. What goes into bringing your ideas to life? Like, what is the creative concept behind each event?
Oh,
heavy questions. I know.
Woo. Oh, my goodness. I think that every event looks different. Most events have the same concept, but they are all different in how I want people to experience it. I think my creative process just happens when I'm inspired by something and it just comes to me. And it's very, very challenging to get me to veer off from that, because I'm like, oh, no, I see it. I feel it. I can touch it. I can taste it. Yeah. And this is the direction. And my team will say she's very particular. And mm-hmm. I am, because mm-hmm. I have done the work to really like experience it for myself. And I'm like, I know people are going to love this. I know they're going to really, really enjoy this. So I think it starts off with me just being inspired, writing it down, kind of working through the process, and then presenting it to my team. Yeah. And then they get the buy-in, and then we launch it and then present it to the guests that may potentially be attending. But because I have so much conviction about it, it gets people really excited. I usually like map out the process and the structure and how I want things to look. And then we go from there, and then we, do all the other process of the systems and how we're going to facilitate it and the tickets and all those things. So,
absolutely.
Yes.
And even, again, even coming to the Love Jones Experience, I saw that very intentional, particular way that you want you and your team, honestly, because they have the same vision as you, how you want your events to be ran. How do you want people to show up, showing up on time, if they are supporting the event, right? But also, you know your audience, right? So saying, like, my folks are going to actually be here on time and they're going to be ready to have the experience as soon as they hit the door. Mm-hmm. It's like a well-oiled machine. And so I felt that when I was there and I saw, I mean, literally your vision came to life. And just even the movie playing while there were performances happening, it was like, it just felt so natural.
Yeah.
It was a good time.
And I also have a theater background, so that's where some of the drama comes from.
Yes, the drama came
Some of the drama comes from the production and all those things. So sometimes we don't necessarily have the resources to do all of what's in my head, because I'm like, we can't be coming from the ceiling.
It's
fireworks.
You will get there.
Yes, we will. We will. Speaking into existence, I appreciate that. But yes, that's where some of that creativity comes from. Absolutely.
Yes. Wanted to get a little bit into, like, your partnerships. So, no, K. Michelle, if you wanted to ask the next question.
Yeah, I'm just interested in the process, if you could walk us through from the initial idea until you are able to execute it and what is involved with reaching out with partnerships. As somebody who does a lot of, like, programs and things like that in my 9-to-5, I'm really curious how you do this where it comes to events like that, too.
Yeah, I think our partnerships are very intentional. And even before I start reaching out to partners, when I come up with the concept and I present it to my team, we usually have a kind of like a think tank session where we're talking about who could help us facilitate this and what is the mutually beneficial process for both parties. Mm-hmm. Because each event is very different and everyone involved is usually different. We have a lot of people that we work with the same, but we want to make sure that they are also getting a benefit from it. So typically present... draft up the concept, present it to the team, and then we draft up who we want to outreach to. Then we start the groundwork on connecting with people, connecting the dots, attending events, presenting the information, and seeing who will want to join us in facilitating the experience.
Now, at these events, do you ever get feedback that will lead you to a whole new event? You know, you get somebody comes up, oh, yeah, I love this. I'm having a great... Did you ever think about having, and then that goes, you're off to the races with a new event that you have in your mind?
Yes. But I will preface this by saying I have a lot, we get a lot of great feedback. We also get some helpful feedback.
Yeah.
And from that, I always get ideas in my head, and my team has to kind of like wheel me back a little bit because I'm like, oh, we can do this now. And they're like, okay, but let's probably just focus on these three things and not the 15 that have been suggested to you.
Okay.
And I'll start going and my mind will start moving and I'll see it. And so I've personally had to learn the process and the difference of taking the information and the feedback and realizing, you know, maybe not right now. It's not that it can't happen, but just right now may not be the best as for capacity or, you know, what our focus is.
Right.
But jotting it down, you know, documenting it, and then when I need to bring it back again, I definitely push it up forward to the team. So, yes, we do get great suggestions often.
All right. Well, thank you for answering that.
Absolutely. Now, some of them are, you know, a little out of whack, but for the most part.
What would you then from that? What has been a big hurdle in trying to pull these things together? Is it networking with an outside partner, like a supplier, that it's your first time, a hurdle that's been like, wow, this is a big thing, and hopefully we won't have to go through it again, or sometimes you do?
Thank you for asking that. I think the first would be resources, because I think a lot of people see the capacity of the event and they see all of the boom, the glam, the pow, and they don't understand how much resources are required to facilitate those. That is like approvals and licensing and financials, team, all those things.
Yes.
Cost, videographers, photographers. Yes. all those things cost, and they cost a lot. So I think having access to resources and capital more specifically has been a bit of a hurdle.
Okay.
As we're exploring and learning how to continue to do these things on a larger scale. The second is learning.
Mm-hmm.
I think I don't have a background in event planning.
Okay.
And when I started this 5 years ago, I was doing get the gathers and gatherings at my house.
Mm-hmm.
And we had fun. And I told my friends one day, I want to do a wine festival. And they're like, cool. We'll help you do that thing. Like, how do we even do that? So even learning how to even do events on a large scale took some time.
Mm-hmm.
And we're continuing to learn. So that has been, I would say, a growing hurdle, but a hurdle nonetheless, just learning how to do it and not having a blueprint, right? Because we're the biggest black wine in Philadelphia, Blind Fest in Philadelphia's history, period.
Okay. Mm.
So the different conversations that other festivals may be having, we didn't really have a lot of resources to have, particularly here in Philadelphia, because it's challenging to do wine and spirits specific events in Philly. That's another podcast.
History of that.
But I do know that it's a need and it's desired and it's wanted, but sometimes it's not easy to facilitate. So the learning through that process has been a bit of a hurdle and a growing pain.
Have you been approached, or have you thought about projecting, you know, years down that you may want to take on an investor, or have you been approached by anyone yet willing to put money into your business, but be in the background?
I think that we will be open to having a conversation.
Mm-hmm.
Again, it just has to be mutually beneficial.
Right.
I do see that a lot of companies that whose initial goal and mission and vision was to create community and maintain the quality and fabric of the things that they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes when they get a lot of investors and a lot of hands in it, they lose it.
Okay.
And we've seen that with other large companies like hair companies and things like that, where they lose the quality.
Right.
So just want to always make sure that we're maintaining the quality. But I am always open to having a conversation.
Right. Thank
Absolutely.
You.
Absolutely. And so those were amazing questions. And it definitely like gave me more insight into the business behind the fun.
Mm-hmm. Ooh, that's good. That would be my TED talk.
Ooh, yes.
I like it.
Well, where do you see Kabila within the next 2 to 5 years?
I would say I see us expanding to other cities and taking the lessons learned that we learned here and expanding to other cities and hopefully other countries.
Mm-hmm.
I would say expanding our team so we are able to do more and receive some of those ideas that we have. And I would also say I would love for us to be in the space of where we are trusted advisors here in the city for some of these large scale events.
Yes.
And we are at the table when they're having
Absolutely.
These conversations,
yes.
particularly when there are millions of people coming in the city and we don't necessarily know all the information about what's happening. We want to be at the table and to be trusted to be able to advise, you know, and get paid to advise and consult. But to advise nonetheless, I think that I want us to go that route as well.
Absolutely.
Yes, definitely.
Yes. This was an amazing conversation. It always hurts me that we only have like 30 minutes to have this, but we have more time to get to know each other and learn more about who you are. So thank you so much
for coming out today. I appreciate you.
You can learn more about Sunny's work and Kabila Events at kabilaevents.com. They're also on Instagram at Kabila Events. Culture Fest is coming up in June. Philly Black Wine and Spirits Fest is in August.
September. Mm-hmm.
Excuse me, I'm sorry. And there's much more on the horizon. Thank you so much.
Brad Linder is Radio News Managing Editor for WPPM. Peter Liu is Radio Operations Manager. And Allison Durham is WPPM's Radio Program Manager. I'm K. Michelle Watson.
And I'm Shania Weitch. thanks to Amanda Johnson, who is our board operator for this episode.
Around the Block will be back next month with another episode featuring more stories and conversation from our team of Philadelphia area community journalists. And you can find more episodes of Block by Block on PhillyCam's SoundCloud, Apple Podcasts, and wherever else you find your podcasts.
Thanks for listening, everybody.